Joining us on Strength for the Journey. Strength for the Journey is a radio program designed to strengthen the believer for the days that lie ahead. We have a website. It's strength with the number 4thejourney.com. That's strengthforthejourney.com. This radio program is number 29 if you're listening by shortwave radio. Tonight, I have a very special guest. His name is Ted Heath, and he's a friend of mine from the United States. He came down here this week to do a evangelistic crusade. He brought 20 or about 6,000, 7,000 tracts with him, and we're going to hold half a dozen different meetings across various cities in the Cherokee province of Panama, and I'm very excited about what God's going to do here this week, starting tomorrow night. Ted's got a very interesting testimony. We grew up as young believers together. I got saved back in 1986, and Ted and I became good friends. Ted had a passion for the lost as well as me, and we went through a school of ministry school in Las Vegas, Nevada together, and we went out witnessing on the streets of Dallas, Texas back in the mid-80s together. And then, as life many times does, you kind of go different directions. I got married shortly thereafter and started a family, and I didn't keep up with Ted. I hadn't talked to Ted in a long time, and somehow our paths reunited, how God does many times, and back about 6 years ago, and we've become very close friends again. And tonight I'd like to introduce this as Ted Heath. Ted, thank you for joining us and coming all the way from the United States to Panama and to share the gospel with the people here.
Well, what a tremendous honor to be here. I pretty much have to just pinch myself to make myself realize that I'm sharing this wonderful radio program with you. So thanks for the opportunity.
Well, this is going to be a great night. Ted has an amazing testimony of what God has done with him in the last several years. And his testimony, I know, will be a source of encouragement for many people who are struggling in their walk with the Lord. And something God does with many of us, as he's done with me in the last 2 years, is many times we just need a stripping of what all the veneer and all the facades, so we can really find out what's down inside of us. And sometimes we don't know what's inside of us until there's nothing left. And God needs to do that because we many times think we're something that we're not. And just share with us a little bit about how you grew up as a Christian. I know your mom was a very strong Christian, and you grew up with that understanding. And just share a little bit about where your walk has evolved to and from.
Well, thank you. And, you know, you're right. My mom was a very dedicated believer, even though we didn't attend a spirit-filled church. She wasn't afraid to me about sharing the strong parts of the gospel. She would warn me about hell. She would take me to meetings where they preached the whole gospel that included what I call the wonderful healing power of the fear of the Lord. So I grew up with that foundation, and that's been key in my life. We met in Dallas and evangelized together, but, you know, after I left Dallas, really my fire sort of flickered at times. You know, I had a lot of the love of the things of the world in my heart, but I was blind to it. And I continued to attend church, and I would tithe, but like many Christians, Jesus, I believed, you know, I'd confess with my mouth, and I thought I believed in my heart, but the truth was I was very deceived about my true spiritual condition for many of those years. My business became successful, and I viewed that as God being pleased with my life, but the truth was I don't think he was pleased with my life. And the little things that I did for God in ministry seemed huge in my mind because, like, once again, I was really quite deceived about my true spiritual condition. If you'd have asked me if God was number one, I probably would have said yes. But the truth is that my love for the things of the world had a huge piece of my heart. But that's part of the deception. So along with that whole issue, one thing I battled for many years was a very debilitating lust problem. And we know that 50% of Christian men in America are addicted to pornography, which is a frightening statistic. And I'm sure, Andrew, it's sad for you that the church largely sweeps this problem under the pew because they don't know how to deal with it. And even though I was never into pornography, if your mind is a virtual cesspool of impure thoughts, you might as well be into pornography. And that was me. I wanted to get set free. I wanted to be a more godly, more holy man. But I couldn't see that constantly saying yes to myself, constantly gratifying myself and saying yes and coddling myself and flattering myself and all the things that we tend to do as fallen men was contributing to my lust problem. I couldn't see that buying guns and building big Jeeps and watching television shows that God hate, even that my lust problem had nothing to do with girls. It was all a condition of my deceived heart. And so,
and this is something that just kind of grows. You don't realize where you're at because it's constantly, the world around us is so filled with it that you don't recognize that you're doing anything wrong because you're identifying yourself with everybody around you. It's kind of like the way I see it is like going to a restaurant and you didn't realize that there was somebody smoking nearby you until you went home. And you went home and you smelt your clothes and go, my goodness, man, my clothes stink like smoke, like I've been in a bar all night. And you wonder where in the world this come from. But it's just the environment that you're around that you are absorbing the things that you don't even recognize that's around you. And when you're living in a society that's just filled with gratifying yourself and doing whatever it takes to please yourself. I mean, this is why advertising works, is because they know the buttons, the right buttons to push to get you to buy. And this is the world that we have grown up in and that we've lived in. And you don't realize how much of it has infected you until you leave it. And this is essentially what happened to my family and I, is that we left that infection, that place that is so consumed with pleasing yourself, to a world that is happy without being without buying everything that they want. It's interesting, Gallup did a poll here about a year ago, and they were looking for the happiest people in the world. And I don't know, it was something like 100 different nations around the world. They had different categories and different questions that were asked to find out where the people were the happiest. And Panama and Paraguay tied for first place. It's interesting that in a society that has just about everything that they want, that the people aren't happy. And this is the saddest thing, the reality, that stuff really doesn't make you happy. It's, well, something else.
Right. In 1 John, we're told that we're not to love the things of the world, because if we love the things of the world, the lust of the love of the Father isn't in us. And that's defined as the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. Well, the lust of the eyes is seeing things that we want to have, whether it's a car or it's a girl. The lust of the flesh is constantly saying yes to ourselves, living for self, gratifying self, entertaining self, promoting self, flattering self, pride. And of course, the pride of life is aspiration, wanting to be successful, wanting to be respected, wanting to have status, wanting to have position. And these are the types of things that fill up our heart. And there's only so much room in our heart. And the thing is if the devil can get us to think more highly of ourselves than we really should, he's got us exactly where he wants us. And so all these things build pride, and pride causes us to start to become deceived about our true spiritual condition. And as you're suggesting, we tend to want to compare ourselves to other worldly Christians, and we don't look any different than what they do. And so we don't think too much of it. You know, we go to church, we act more spiritual than we really are. I mean, there's much pressure in the church to act more spiritual than you really are. And so we do that because we want to be loved and we want to be respected, and all these things contribute to a lust problem. So if 50% of Christian men are addicted to pornography, what percentage of Christian men are at a minimum battling with a lust problem? It's huge. And what I wanted to say to all those men is there is freedom out there. But what's strange for me was I wanted to be more godly, but I didn't know how to get set free. I didn't have any idea. I think I've mentioned to you, it was like looking at a 1,000-piece puzzle when you're trying to get set free. It's like looking at a 1,000-piece puzzle, but every piece is white. There's no edges to line up. There's no leaves to line up. You don't know how to get set free. But now that I'm set free and I look back, it was a puzzle made for a 3-year-old and had about 4 or 5 pieces. And part of my problem was I was unbroken. I didn't see the need to be broken and humbled. I didn't have any fear of the Lord. The scriptures about men with sexual sin don't get to go to heaven. I mean, I knew those scriptures and they were somewhat real to me, but the fear of the Lord can make them very real to you. And once you have the fear of God in you, the properly biblically mandated fear of God, it's a whole lot easier to flee that sexual lust. I mean, let's assume that God was to really bring his fear on this earth right now through natural disasters, a financial collapse, what have you. And you and I both believe that's coming. Is the chief thing in the men's mind going to be some girl? No, that's going to be the farthest thing from their mind when God brings his fear upon this earth. Then lust is not going to be a battle anymore. So the trick is to feed on the parts of the Bible and compare ourselves with, not with other Christians, but compare ourselves to the word of Jesus and allow the fear of the Lord to force us to start to examine ourselves. And that is the path to getting set free. But the more we feed it, the more it grows, like anything. So if we're feeding our minds on television and the things of the world, then that's what's going to be in our heart. God's not going to be number one, like we're told he's supposed to be in Matthew 2. We'll be deceived and think he is. But the truth is, the love of the things of the world and a lack of death to self will deceive us, and we will not produce fruit. You know, when Jesus in Matthew 7 said, the fruit tree that does not produce good fruit is cut down and thrown in the fire. So that's very frightening. And if that doesn't frighten people, then they need to examine themselves and ask why. But you're not going to be able to produce fruit, eternal fruit, if your heart is full of the love of the things of the world. And, you know, it's kind of like we are what we eat. Fat, greasy food makes a fat, greasy dude. Okay, and so if we're feeding our hearts on the fat, greasy food of the world system, entertainment system, don't be surprised if you have a lust problem. But just know it has nothing to do with girls. And the problem with a lust problem is you're committing adultery on your wife over and over and over in your heart. And you are not the godly husband and the godly father you should be. But you're deceived into believing you are. And that's where it's very destructive in the home.
It is. And a lot of times we think that we have a discipline problem with our children. And what I've learned is that the discipline problem really is with the parent. And the children are just manifesting the rebellion that's really in the heart of the parents as well. And I didn't realize this so much as when God really got a hold of me this last 2 years and started really exposing the rebellion of my own life, even though there's many acts of obedience in my heart by even us coming down here and leaving everything, there was still a lot of smoke in my clothes, so to speak. There's still a lot of influences that I didn't really realize until I started to really read the Gospels with the fear of the Lord that you're talking about. And that's why many times on this program I share that if you really want to know what God's voice sounds like, you know, we're all trying to sort through God's voice, just start reading the red letters of the Bible. I mean, if you want to see what Jesus' voice sounds like, it sounds, you know, when he speaks to us today, it sounds just like that voice in the red letters in their Bible. And you realize the things that he said to people, they aren't really preached a whole lot in the churches today. You don't see the fear of the Lord that should just strike and grip the heart of man when it says that not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom, but he that does the will of my Father. Many are going to say to me, Lord, have we not done all these wonderful works? And he said, I never knew you. Depart from me. So what I'm realizing now, when you ask somebody, you know, hey, do you know the Lord? That's the wrong question to ask. The real question we should all be asking ourselves, does the Lord know me? And when you start really putting yourself in a position where you really say, God, I don't even know myself. I think I want to see myself from your perspective. I want to see who you see. Because I remember one time, it almost seems embarrassing to talk about this, but when I was a young Christian, I was sitting on the toilet and I was talking to the Lord. And I said, Lord, I sure kind of feel funny, you know, sitting here talking to you while I'm sitting on a toilet. And he said to me, he goes, I don't see you like you see you. I see through you. And I sort of had to think about that for a while. You know, sometimes you're trying to wonder if God's speaking to you. When you have to think about something you just thought, mm-hmm. that maybe that wasn't your thought. If you're trying to sort through, is this God trying to speak to me? And when I started to think about that, he sees right through us. There's the truth is there's nothing hidden from God. We're a Hollywood TV set, and he knows this is just a big show. We're a big act. We put on the wonderful happy face to go to church, and we take our Bibles with us so we look real spiritual. But we haven't opened the Bible all week long. No. And the sad thing is not that we haven't opened the Bible; it's that we didn't really want to. Mm-hmm. And I think many times we don't get the right answers in life because we're not even asking the right questions. And so you start asking the right questions, you're never going to get the right answers. The real question should be, you know, I should have opened my Bible this week. I didn't. I guess I got too busy or whatever. Well, the question is, why didn't you want to?
Right.
The question is, why don't you want to? The real issue is down inside of our heart. What do we really want? Because that's really what we did all week, is what we really wanted to do.
Right. What do we hunger for? Do we hunger for the things of the world, or do we hunger for the things of God's eternal kingdom? You know, and are we being honest with ourselves, you know, about that? You had some awesome points. You know, one of my favorite scriptures in the Bible, which I'm going to talk about this weekend, is found in Luke 18. And it's found in the parable of the rich man, the Pharisee and the tax collector. And the Pharisee looks up, they both go to the temple and pray. And the Pharisee says, God, I thank you that I'm not like other people. I'm not like this wicked tax collector over here. Thank you that I do all these things for you. And when he looks at the small things that he does for God, they seem huge in his mind. Okay, huge. He's completely deceived about himself by pride. He has no fear of the Lord. Then the tax collector goes to pray, and he's so completely undone over his own sinful nature. And he may not even been into something like sexual sin. It may have just been the selfishness and the pride that he inherited from Adam. Okay. But he has so much sorrow and so much brokenness for the sin in his life that he's literally pounding on his own chest. God, save me. I'm a wicked man, Father. Please, God, help me. Please help me, God. I'm a wicked man. And that's what he's crying out. And Jesus says, that's the man who's saved. Why? Because he's broken. He has sorrow for the sin in his life. And that's the key, is to keep our hearts in that penitent, moment-by-moment, broken condition where we're humbled by the fear of the Lord, because out of that will flow fruit that will save us from the fire.
Yeah. That's the sad thing, is that there's very little of that in the world today. It's absolutely opposite of our human nature, is to humble ourselves.
Right.
And if, you know, the one thing I've just been looking at and seeing so blatantly now is the principles of the kingdom are absolutely opposite of the things of this world. If you want to, it's like if you want to go up in this elevator in the kingdom of God, it's the down button. You know, it's absolute, everything is inversed. It's not the way the things that we've grown up in the world. And until you understand that the button to go up is to humble ourselves. It's a broken. It's a servant. Whoever wants to be greatest of all must be the servant of all. And right. he was the example. He said, if I don't wash your feet, you have no part with me. If you don't let me be the example that you need, if you won't let me do this, then you have no part with me. And most people are too prideful, you know, to even think about humbling yourself. I mean, this was kind of a humbling. I mean, Jesus was washing their feet, and this was a humbling moment that the master would wash their feet. But he was trying to show them an example.
Imagine what a different country it would be if the presidents of big corporations would go down and start washing feet on the assembly line.
Exactly.
Right. And so, you know, you had asked me to share my testimony, and it's an awesome opportunity. when you start realizing that many of the things that you believed about yourself aren't true, it's kind of a violent process eternally. You know, you start looking in the mirror and you realize, you know, what's really scary about that Luke's 18 is how we can look in the mirror and think that we're looking at the broken tax collector when the truth is there's still a lot of Pharisee in us. And, you know, even to this day, but the Lord has really, it's been an internally violent process, this sort of humbling process. But my heart will still lie to me. I mean, my heart still wants me to believe that I'm more surrendered than I really am, that I'm more broken than I really am, that I'm more dead to self than I really am. And you're right. You know, Jesus said the first will be last, that the ones who are poor will be rich, the ones that weep will be happy, the ones that are hungry will be fed. And the first, and so everything is flip-flop in his kingdom.
Everything's flip-flopped. You know, I've been all week long, I've been thinking about the road to life begins with death. That if we want to get on the road to life, that there has to be a death that comes first in our life. And that death is our death to self, that we no longer are living for ourselves. Because as long as we're living for ourselves, we'll never live for him. Because it's a directly opposition. Because we want to be the master of our life. How can he be the master of our life if there's two people sitting on the throne? We have to humbly put him in that place of lordship and say, nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. And until we're step off the throne of our CEO position that I'm going to make the decisions around here, we really cannot be his disciple. And that is very clear in the Gospel of Luke, where he lets everybody know that it's very plain and simple. It's like here you are. This is the criteria if you want to be my disciple. Because if you don't follow these certain categories, if you love anybody more than me, you cannot be my disciple. If you can't pick up your cross, deny yourself, and follow me, you cannot be my disciple. And he said, if you don't forsake all, you cannot be my disciple. So I think, well, how many people have excluded themselves from being discipled by the Lord because they won't give up this stuff? Obviously, the rich young ruler had too much to give up to go follow Jesus. And this is why I think where most people are today is they have too much to give up, and they don't realize it, though.
Right. The things of the world, the possessions, money, has a huge piece of their heart. You know, this is the way I like to say it, and you're just smack on, and you know, if most Christians were asked if God is number one, they would say yes, because Matthew 22 says that's the highest commandment, so they're going to respond yes to it. But if we're honest with ourselves, and that's key, obviously, is to be honest with ourselves. If we had to spend as much time reading our Bible, serving others in the name of Jesus, praying, and working diligently for God's kingdom, if we had to spend as much time doing that as we do spend entertaining ourselves, watching television, playing video games, surfing the web, playing sports, doing the things that we want to do. If we had to spend as much time doing that as the other, we would be completely miserable.
Absolutely. And I thought so many years when I first got saved, before that point, I thought I'd be a miserable Christian because they do stuff I don't want to do. And so that's one of the reasons why I didn't get saved till I was 29, is because I wasn't willing to submit to a God that wanted to change my desires. I didn't realize that when he came in, that he would actually change my desires to where I didn't want to do the stuff I used to want to do, that I thought I couldn't give up. But this is the thing, is that until the seed goes into the ground and dies, it abides alone, Jesus said. You know, I use the most illustrative analogy of a born-again process is the caterpillar, that it has to go into a tomb called a cocoon before it can become a butterfly. That in that tomb, in that place of death, that's where the wings grow. That's where the freedom takes place. Because you will never have wings to be free from sin until you die first, like that caterpillar. But the wonderful thing that takes place, not only do you grow wings to fly from your old ways, is that your appetite changes. There's a little chomper mechanism that looks, they're little, like they call it a mandible on a caterpillar. But the amazing miracle that takes place inside that cocoon is that mandible turns into a proboscis that sucks the nectar out of a flower. And it never eats a leaf again because the appetite is even changed. inside that metamorphosis. And this is where most people never go to that place where they're willing to lay down their life to get a new life, because you can't have two lives. You have to lay down one to get the new one. And this is the offer that Jesus is giving us. But the thing that you have to give up, you know, the gospel has been preached in such a way that people can think that they can live two lives. Right. They can have it both ways. They can have the new life and the old life, but it doesn't happen that way.
One foot on the narrow road, one foot on the wide road. You get split down the middle.
Yeah, and the narrow road is a road that many few will desire to be on, because it is a road that is filled with obedience and a lordship that many have never experienced. It's a liberating road, but it's a road that just the thought of it is a scary thing. Is that you have? It's like you think that you'll never do again what you want to do, but it's like a parent that knows that you're out in the middle of a street playing, and an 18-wheeler's coming, but you want to play in that street because you know you'd rather die than leave your playground. But there's an 18-wheeler heading for you, and this is the way it is when we're playing in the world. Is that Satan is just waiting for the moment to take us out, and it's only the grace of God that all of us are even here right now, that Ted and I are here talking to you on this program tonight, and you're even here listening, because it's only God's grace that we're alive. I can think of so many times that I should be dead right now, and I'm sure you as well, Ted, is that you think, look back and you think, wow, how am I even here right now? We have just a few moments left. The next minute or so, but why don't you just share the next 30 seconds, just a little bit. We're going to have another, Ted's going to be on the next program with me again, and we're going to go a little bit more into depth on some of the things that we talked about, but give us about 30 seconds just from your heart of what you feel is what's be liberating for people.
The narrow road is where the joy is. That old life of stuff and catering to self made me miserable, because the more you feed it, the more it grows, and it never satisfies. But being on fire for God, there's no life like that. You know, to think that I could be running around here like a crazy man with a bunch of tracks, giving them to kids and stuff, and that it creates unbelievable joy and freedom in my soul and spirit, that my cars and my guns and my Jeeps just made me miserable and left me wanting more. But Jesus is the answer to our satisfaction and joy.
Yes. Thank you for joining us on Strength for the Journey. Again, our website is strength4thejourney.com, and we'll see you next time.
I will be strength for the journey.